This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, this got my attention, I have to say. Pro Football Focus, Sam Monson, who is their lead NFL writer, wrote a post, I read it this morning, says the Bills... The Buffalo Bills have the best wide receiver core, the best wide receiver group in the NFL. Sam Monson is on the line with us, I believe. Sam, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. How's it going, guys?
Good. Not since the days of Andre Reed, James Lofton, and my partner Steve Tasker has anybody thought the Bills had the best wide receiver core in the NFL. What are you thinking there, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I like the guys that they had brought in a year ago, Beasley and John Brown. I think that they were getting the right type of receiver. And then you bring in a Stephon Diggs, and it just catapults that group to a completely different level. And, you know, I'd always kind of thought that Stephon Diggs was a very good player anyway. And just from diving into the research and his tape to do this article, if anything, my opinion of him only went up. I mean, he is good at everything you need to be a wide receiver. And if you look at his production, the sort of the relative lack of production compared with, you know, superstars like Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins or the guys at the very top of the NFL list, I don't think the reason that he's not at that level is anything due to him. I think it's just because he's been in a run-first offense in Minnesota. He emerged kind of at the same time as Adam Thielen, so they inherently, you know, took some targets and took some production away from each other. But I think that you plug, you know, Stephon Diggs into the same situation as those other guys and you get pretty much the same results.
Yeah, you made a great point about one of the complaints that Stephon Diggs had last year was the lack of targets. I mean, he just didn't get the ball enough from Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, an accurate thrower of the football, not the rocket arm, not a huge arm like Josh Allen, but it's going to be kind of a balance. You kind of expect, your thought was that Steph Diggs might get a lot more targets in Buffalo than he did in the run-first offense in Minnesota, but the quarterback throwing them might be a little less accurate. So the net give and take of that, going from fewer targets and a more accurate quarterback to more targets and a less accurate quarterback, may be what makes this Steph Diggs trade makes us able to evaluate it.
Right. It's going to be an interesting balance because, you know, obviously he grew frustrated with his time in Minnesota that the ball just wasn't coming his way enough. But when the ball did come his way, it tended to be pretty accurate. And Cousins, you know, threw some absolute dimes to Diggs over the past couple of seasons that a lot of quarterbacks would not have made. A lot of quarterbacks would not have put the ball where it needed to go and give Diggs a shot to make those catches. But, you know, Diggs was getting frustrated. Now, I don't know how much more or less frustrated he would be if he got a lot more passes come his way, but they didn't have the same level of accuracy. You know, they asked a lot more of him, and it's going to be interesting to watch. Does he get frustrated in Buffalo as well if the accuracy does become a problem, or is he happy with just being given more opportunities, whether the ball is necessarily where it needs to be or not? But I think the real key thing that the Bills have done over the past 2 years now is they've targeted receivers that specialize in getting separation. And I think that is such a smart thing to do in today's NFL. You know, we look for, when we're evaluating receivers, what should we be trying to identify as their single biggest trait? And for me, that's the key thing. You don't need to be, you know, 6'3 and 220 pounds. If you get open, that's the single biggest thing you can do for a quarterback in terms of maximizing the window he has to throw you the ball.
Well, we're with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, who says the Bills have the best wide receiver core in the NFL. The question to target, Sam, is interesting to me. And I'm wondering if we had a poll of our listeners a week or so ago about who's going to lead the team in receptions next year. And there was sort of a consensus that even though Diggs may not lead the team in receptions, Beasley might, John Brown might, he might be the most effective receiver they have. Could it be that he wouldn't lead the Bills in receptions, even if he if they focus on him as a target in the passing game?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't. You know, if you look last season, John Brown, like typically the slot guy would be the guy that would be a threat to take to lead the team in receptions, just from an efficiency standpoint. You know, a lot of teams will feed those guys the ball underneath, and they get a ton of targets and a ton of receptions, and you might get more catches than your quote-unquote number one receiver, but it's a very different type of pass being sent your way. But even last season, you know, John Brown had more targets, more receptions than Cole Beasley did. And, you know, Stephon Diggs should step in above John Brown as a true sort of number one when it comes to target share. So, yeah, I don't see a good reason why Diggs wouldn't get the most targets and the most receptions on the team.
How high does this elevate the expectations for Josh Allen's improvement?
Yeah, I think it has to be high. I mean, between this, between them surrounding him with the right type of receivers, between the Patriots losing Tom Brady and the door suddenly being wide open in the AFC East, I think expectations have to be huge for Buffalo right now, not just Josh Allen and his development to take another step forward and sort of meet this receiving core where it should be, but also the whole team in terms of taking a step forward and being a not just a team that hopes they can snatch the AFC East if the Patriots have a down year, but a team that expects to win that division and contend in the playoffs.
We're on the line with Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus lead NFL writer, the host of the Pro Football Focus NFL show. You say the Bills may have the best wide receiver group in the NFL. It's not just Diggs, right? Can you talk up? You've talked about Brown and Beasley. Is there anybody else who kind of factors into that consideration? Isaiah McKenzie, we just had him on the show yesterday, maybe. Andre Roberts, anybody else who would contribute to them being the best receiver group in the NFL? What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got some interesting players like McKenzie and like Roberts further down, but it's really about that top three. And I think people underrate the quality of John Brown and Cole Beasley. You know, they dropped a couple of passes more than they should have last season, but even then, it was more when those drop passes were dropped and the sheer volume of them. They combined for 10 drops last season, which is not a huge amount when you consider they had like 200 targets thrown their way. So I think they were overall a kind of underrated receiving duo anyway. And then you bump them each down one in the depth chart. You know, now John Brown is a quality number two. Cole Beasley is a number three. And as a trio, you've got three guys that all specialize in getting open and all do it at sort of different levels of the defense as their calling card. You know, John Brown gets open deep, Cole Beasley gets open underneath, and Stephon Diggs gets open pretty much all over the field. So I think as a trio, you know, you might have receiving groups elsewhere in the NFL. You think Tampa Bay, they probably have a stronger 1-2 punch, but I don't know that anybody has a better 1-2-3 than the Bills right now.
I got to ask you as well about this Stephon Diggs trade. How can you rate how good or bad it was, given the fact that you, the guys you mentioned that Steph Diggs, if he was in their position, like Julio Jones, like AJ Green, like a DeAndre Hopkins, if he had been on those teams with more targets, that kind of thing, he'd have been a better player or commensurate with those guys. The Bills, with all the draft picks involved in the trade for Stephon Diggs, the Bills get him back for $11 million a year for four more years. And you put that in contrast with the contract that Amari Cooper signed, the deal that AJ Green is going to get or has in the franchise tag, Julio Jones contract. Doesn't it seem like the Steph Diggs deal turns into more of a bargain for the Bills?
I mean, I think the deal is an absolute steal for Buffalo, even if they have to extend him to a bigger contract. You know, even if they have to re-sign Diggs to a more market sort of market-appropriate contract for one of the best receivers in the NFL, I still think it's a great return. You know, they basically trade away a reasonably low first-round pick, and then, honestly, the rest of it is noise. It's I know there's a few picks that went that way, the fifth, the sixth, the 2021 fourth, but you don't tend to find star players. And I know Diggs is the exception that proves that rule. He was a fifth-round player. But you look at the fifth-round picks over the past couple of seasons, there's basically been nobody. Those picks are not picks that you expect to find quality contributions from in the NFL draft, those picks, I think, are best used in a trade like this as make weights for a proven commodity. And, you know, the Bills had a need, I think, that they wanted to attack a number one receiver, and they've got an absolute star in Stephon Diggs, and all it cost them was, you know, the best pick that they could have given up in this draft to try and find that guy anyway. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic deal for the Bills, and if you factor in the fact that he was on a really team-friendly contract, if they keep him on that deal and don't give him a, you know, a higher paid pay rise, I think it's an absolute bargain.
Sam, any thoughts on what the Bills draft should be about now? Their first pick is not till the 54th overall selection on day two, draft round number two. What should their focus be in the draft in 3 weeks? What do you think?
Well, I think they, with the Diggs deal, they put themselves in a really good position of not having a glaring need rolling into the draft and being able to just, you know, play the cards as they're dealt. You know, the Bills can now see where the value is and whether it's adding talent to the defensive front, whether it's adding offensive line depth. They can basically, you know, play that draft as it unfolds in front of them. I think that's a great position to be in. It's kind of what free agency and trades are all about. It's about addressing your biggest concerns before you get into the draft so you don't need to go chasing value. I think there's a couple of spots where they could certainly add some depth, but this is a good-looking roster now, top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree with you. I got to ask you as well that the quarterbacks are moving around different teams. That's up and stuff. Obviously, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, Philip Rivers in Indianapolis. Which one of those guys, are those two veterans that we've seen play for at least a decade and a half, Tom Brady for two decades, Tom Brady or Philip Rivers, who's in the better situation?
It's tough because I think, you know, Philip Rivers has the best offensive line that's ever been put in front of him now in Indianapolis. And he has, you know, a really good situation in terms of play calling, the scheme there with Frank Reich. But I don't love the receivers that he's throwing to right now. He's only got T.Y. Hilton, really, not an awful lot yet to work with. And they traded away their first-round pick in free agency. So it's going to be tough for them to assemble a really good receiving core around him. Tampa Bay, you've got a really good receiving duo. They might have the best duo in the NFL with Godwin and Evans. The offensive line is okay, but I don't think it's a strength. And then the defense was moving in the right direction last season. So I think from a personnel standpoint, the Bucs may be a really good spot. But the question mark there is, what does this Tom Brady, Bruce Arians hybrid sort of mashup offense look like? You know, Arians has a very specific style. He hasn't tended to mold it much to the quarterbacks that have been in his systems. And Tom Brady obviously is used to something completely different. So what does that look like? And can that get the best play out of Tom Brady? I think they're both in good situations, though. I think they both turn those two teams into legitimate playoff contenders.
Sam Monson, our guest from Pro Football Focus. I want to ask you about a quarterback out west, Tyrod Taylor, and the Los Angeles Chargers. Sam, are the Chargers, well, I think they are good with him as their veteran quarterback candidate, and do you anticipate they'll draft a rookie as well, maybe with the sixth overall pick?
Yeah, I would expect them to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft. I don't know if they're, you know, in love enough with Justin Herbert to take him that high, or if they would look to trade down and make it happen. But there's also a possibility that, you know, Tua Tagovailoa might drop to six. Adam Schefter has come out, I know, and said the Dolphins might not be as sold on Tua as everybody thinks they are. And all of a sudden, we could see him slip down to where the Chargers pick, and he becomes their quarterback of the future. And honestly, that gives them a nice sort of bridge. You've got Tyrod Taylor there who could play for the time it takes for Tua to get himself 100% healthy and ready to go.
What about signing a guy like Cam Newton or Jameis Winston in San Diego? Certainly, you could make the case that certainly Cam Newton is an upgrade from Tyrod Taylor, maybe even Jameis Winston, if coaches feel like they can wean him off the interception train, they can cut down on his turnovers. He's got a live arm through for 5,000 yards. That's kind of the thing that speaks to NFL coaches. What about one of those two options, Jameis Winston or Cam Newton, to come in and play ahead of Tyrod Taylor if indeed they don't draft somebody, or even if they do?
Yeah, I think the fact that Bruce Arians didn't want any part of Jameis Winston in year two speaks volumes in terms of the confidence anybody has in being able to stop Jameis Winston's turnover propensity. I think you know, Bruce Arians has always tended to have a rough first year with quarterbacks in his system, but year two is when they really start to click and cut down on the mistakes and make all those big plays. And at no point did he ever seem interested in bringing Jameis back for that year two. So I think the league is just kind of done with Jameis in terms of a starting opportunity at the moment, and he's going to have to get a sort of reclamation job as a backup and try and do what Ryan Tannehill did a season ago. And then Cam Newton, I think, you know, healthy Cam Newton obviously is a huge upgrade over Tyrod Taylor, but the last time we saw healthy Cam Newton is getting further and further in the past, and I think that's his big concern is we don't know what the 2020 version of Cam Newton actually looks like because of all those injuries and the toll they've taken on his body. And I suspect that because of that, there aren't going to be too many teams, you know, knocking his door down to hand him a starting opportunity either.
Sam, is Washington all set with Dwayne Haskins as their starting quarterback? Do they feel like he's the guy? They made a trade for Allen, to back him up, maybe even compete for a starting job. He wants to compete for a starting job. What do you think's going on there?
I think they probably are. I think people have been looking to replace Haskins all offseason, whether it was with some of these veteran quarterbacks, whether it's drafting a guy like Tua at number two. But I think Haskins showed, I mean, not as much as any of the other rookie quarterbacks because he didn't play as much, but on a sort of per-snap basis, I think he showed a lot as a rookie. He didn't make many mistakes at all. And by the sort of later on in the season, he was making a lot more big throws. He was pushing the ball down the field. He was being more aggressive. And when you consider that he was sort of starting behind the eight ball in terms of trying to learn a difficult offense to get to grips with right away, I think he did a pretty good job. And I've never been quite sure why there's been such a rush to replace him as the starting quarterback compared with the attitudes towards, you know, Daniel Jones, Kyler Murray, even Gardner Minshew, his sort of peers as rookie quarterbacks. So I think they're probably going to give him a shot this year. Kyle Allen comes in as a backup that's familiar with the system, but it's going to be Haskins' job, and I think that's probably the right call.
Sam, they're also on the other side of the football. We've been talking about offenses and quarterbacks a little bit. The pass rushers like Everson Griffin, Jadeveon Clowney, there's some guys, and that market seems to have dried up. What are your thoughts on what the reason for that might be? Maybe those guys are two different and separate situations, but why are people and teams not interested or not, you know, beating down the door of Everson Griffin and Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, I think they probably are two separate situations. With Clowney, I think it's just because he wants market-setting money. He wants to be the best-paid edge rusher in the NFL. And he isn't the best edge rusher in the NFL. You know, all the data suggests, and I think looking at sacks doesn't tell the whole story, but even if you look at just pressure, he's never topped 65 pressures in a season. Last year, Za'Darius Smith led the NFL with 93. So there's a big drop off between the top edge rushers in terms of pressure and where Jadeveon Clowney is every single season. And I think that's significant. And teams just don't want to make him the best paid guy in the NFL when he isn't at that level. Everson Griffin, I think it's probably more of a case of, it might be a case of him trying to bide his time and land in the right situation after the draft. You know, he's a guy that is still capable of getting good pressure. And to be honest, in terms of play level, there really isn't much between Jadeveon Clowney and Everson Griffin. It's just age that separates them. So Griffin might be, you know, trying to target the ideal landing spot post-draft and find a place where he can get, you know, legit or starting time and not have to worry about a rookie eating into his snaps.
Hey, Sam, the last thing I have for you, and it's back to the Bills for a second. You say the Bills could have the NFL's best receiving core this coming year. Okay, if that's to happen, how can they best take advantage of it? And in particular, through the analytical lens that Pro Football Focus specializes in, how should the offense evolve a little bit to take advantage of the good receiving core that you say they've assembled?
I honestly don't think it needs to, and that's the beauty of the type of player they've tried to assemble, is that they, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can try and maximize passing efficiency, but I think the single biggest one is getting guys that are just going to get open, because at that point, the quarterback has a bigger margin for error. You know, you think of, you know, a quick out route. If you're able to lose your man by 2 or 3 yards, suddenly the quarterback can leave that ball a little bit behind you, and it's not you don't have to worry about a pass breakup or an interception, because the cornerback is right in the receiver's hip. So that group is going to make Josh Allen more efficient because they're able to get wider open than the receivers in the past. So, yeah, I don't think they need to do a whole lot schematically to change. I think they just need to hope that Josh Allen can, you know, embrace the fact that his job is going to be made a little bit easier because he's got better receivers, and that improves everything around him.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.